Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today, joining us from AT&T Park in San Francisco, John Shea, columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. But before we talk to John, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. And John Shea joins us from AT&T Park in San Francisco. John, you're there early. You were on MLB Network this morning, so I would imagine you might even have a place to stay there at the ballpark because you're doing so many reports and you work so many hours. You might as well just set up shop there and pay rent, I guess, right?
Well, if the Giants do that, Larry Bear would charge me, so let's not go.
But, you know, in all seriousness, speaking of schedule, maybe the entire Giants team needs to have, betting there at the ballpark. Their schedule has been nuts. I mean, you go back to a previous homestand where they were in New York playing a night game against the Mets, had to come back and play a game. And now here they are playing a Sunday night game on ESPN in Washington, coming back, playing another game tonight against the Mets. Although, from what I understand, you were saying on MLB Network, their schedule's a little different. They didn't fly overnight. They flew this morning.
Yeah, I think as we speak here, they're in the air, and they were to arrive at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon at SFO, and then many of them would just jet straight to the ballpark, the guys who arrive early and go over the scouting, you know, the coaches and the clubbies and the catchers and, maybe some hitters who want to see some tape. You know, the guys who don't live close to the ballpark will come straight here and kick back for a while. These guys show up so early anyway, it's unbelievable compared to basketball and football. It's really amazing how early they do come to the ballpark. But in this case, they played Sunday night in Washington, and they have a sleep doctor who kind of guided them through the postseason last year. If you remember that first series in Washington, they flew right after the game. They had the day off, and they were kind of off kilter in the next game and lost it. So in the next round in the LCS, they had a similar situation where they just stayed in St. Louis, flew home on the off day, and were better refreshed the next day when they picked it up at home. And ditto for the Kansas City series and the World Series. So fast forward to this year, and last month they play in New York on a Thursday, a night game. You know, Sandy Alderson wanted a night game. The Giants preferred a day game. There's a little tension because the Mets were saying, well, we draw better at night, and, it doesn't matter about you. It's about us. We're the home team. Well, Bochy was steaming. He didn't appreciate coming in at 4:30 in the morning, getting to bed after 5, and then playing that night. And if you remember, the Diamondbacks swept him. Bumgarner lost 1-0. He pitched well, but he wasn't his normal self. I think they scored 2 runs in the series. They were pretty much out of it for 3 days. So this time, same situation, a Sunday night game, not a Thursday night game. Instead of flying after the game, they stay in Washington, get a good night's sleep. I think it was like a 9:30 bus out to the airport. So, you have decent sleep. And then, these guys, it's first class all the way, right? It's not like you and I, waiting an hour and a half to get on and, sitting in the middle seat with a couple of big dudes. So now, these guys, have a row to themselves, do anything they want on 30,000 feet. So now they're going to be here. They're a good night's sleep. They're going to be well rested. So we'll see, how they do in the series and moving forward. But the Red Sox did something similar after playing the Yankees in a night game, Sunday night game, I believe. They stayed the night and came to the West Coast. They played San Francisco, in fact, and won 7-0. So, who knows what'll happen, but you know, the so-called sleep doctor they have advises them of, you know, the best way to go about this. And, you know, Bochy, after the episode with the Mets and how it didn't work with the Diamondbacks thereafter, said, well, let's go for it. Let's just stay here, relax, and have a good flight home the next day.
We'll have more with our regular guest, John Shea, columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, right after this. Giants fans are settling for nothing but the best these days, so if you're in the market for buying or selling real estate in San Francisco, you'll want the A-number-one real estate agent. Well, at McGuire Real Estate, the top producer is Robert Merriman, and I encourage you to give him a call at 415-351-4698 or check him out at robertmerriman.com. Robert Merriman is opening doors for buyers and sellers in the city, and his excellent service is never discounted. Whether you're a buyer or seller in San Francisco, you need a creative negotiator on your team. Robert Merriman at McGuire Real Estate is the man for the job. Contact Robert at 415-351-4698. That's 415-351-4698. Or robertmerriman.com. Well, that sleep doctor is working overtime this year, especially on this last road trip with all the different start times. One of them at 11 a.m. Another one was, I think, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, all kinds of start times. And by the way, Bruce Bochy wasn't the only one who was upset about the scheduling the last time around when the Giants came back, as we mentioned, from New York. Listen to what Jeremy Affelt of the Giants had to say here on Inside China Basin about the poor scheduling.
When you get back at, you know, 5 in the morning, but by the time you get back to the field, into your bed, the sun's come up, and then you're expected to play at 7:05 and then have a 4:15 and then have a 1:05. I'm saying that there's sometimes you come out of it okay, but sometimes you don't, and I think there's going to be a good reason why if you don't. So, you know, I think that needs to be addressed. We're not robots, and if you're going to treat us like robots, I think we need to look at the scenario.
They're definitely not robots, John. And all these different start times, that kind of plays into it too. And, you know, and I wonder, just with all of that, I wonder if it's added up, because the Giants look like a tired team right now. They were swept of that 6-game road trip. Everybody on this team right now kind of looks like there's not a lot of energy. They're making mental mistakes. It's just not the same team that they were a little bit earlier this year.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of teams have travel issues. There are 30 teams, and they can all complain about something. But it seems when the Giants bring things up, they tend to get things done. You remember every catcher in the book was getting beat up. But when it happened to Posey, he was out for 4 months, and Bochy kind of said, this needs to be changed. Well, it was changed. And now he's saying this needs to be changed. And, you know, the union's listening, MLB listening. Jeez. Bochy's an elder statesman now. I mean, he's the Joe Torre of the day, the La Russa, the Bobby Cox of the day. I mean, he's a distinguished person. I mean, he came to San Diego with, you know, from San Diego with a losing record, and you know, 07 was rough, and 08 was a learning process, and 09, and then suddenly 3 championships in 5 years, and people calling him a Hall of Fame manager. So, and just the other day, I was talking to Arenado, the third baseman with the Rockies, and he says he's an intimidating presence. And I said, wow, that's the first time I ever heard that. But here's a 24-year-old kid. That's all he knows of Bochy, you know, winning championships in October. That's all he's ever seen of this guy. So, he seems to be a get-it-done guy. When he speaks, people listen.
He seems real agitated right now. I mean, it's not just the fact that the Giants put up a bagel, as Henry Shulman put it, by the way, on the road trip. You know, bagel, no wins on that road trip. But it's also just the way things are going. The umpiring has been really going against them, especially balls and strikes. You look at those strike zones, maybe that affects me and you watching it, because it seems like the Giants are really getting a lot of bad calls, and they're agitated. Bochy gets ejected. Vogelsong gets ejected. And what about these mental mistakes? That's got to be driving the skipper nuts, because in that series in Washington, I mean, Brandon Belt, he gets picked off. He doesn't cover first base on that deflection. Angel Pagan, he doesn't throw to second base right away when Bryce Harper turns that single into a double, and he just rounds second base, Pagan does, on the bases, and it just assumes that there's an out there when the ball's dropped, and then he's tagged out. Mm-hmm. Blanco came around third. He got faked out. I mean, all kinds of just mental errors that you would say a good team doesn't make these mistakes, or maybe it's just, as I said again, a fatigue team right now. What do you think?
Nobody gets more frustrated about mental errors than Bochy. you know, after 6 weeks of spring training, going over the basics and the fundamentals, and grown men doing things that you wouldn't want high school kids to do. But it's especially noticeable in these close games when the offense is chugging along and you know, the pitching is kind of fatigued, and the rotation ERA wasn't good during the six-game, you know, skid on the road here. And then you make these bonehead moves, and it just, you can just see the gray hairs falling out of the manager. And it's so avoidable. I mean, it's just common sense. You don't overrun a bag until you are absolutely sure there's an out. I'm talking about Pagan and,
right,
and, you know, Blanco getting fooled. I mean, you don't run until you're absolutely sure he lets go of the ball, and he didn't. He faked him, and then he caught him at third base. And you just can't make those mistakes, especially when there's a lack of depth, guys are playing out of position, and they're just limping to the finish line here at the All-Star break.
It just seems that way, and especially even the bullpen. That's the one area where you kind of take the Giants bullpen for granted. It's always been so great, but a lot of guys seem to be, you know, tired. Even George Contos has been great, but then, you know, he gave up that home run yesterday. He was the one guy you could have looked at, but Jeremy Affeldt goes on the DL. Santiago Casilla, he had a little bit of a sore shoulder, and he had a hiccup on the road trip. Javier Lopez, he hasn't looked the same. I mean, you could really run down just about every guy. You know, Yusmeiro Petit, always so valuable and somebody who you can count on as a long reliever, but not lately. So it's almost as if the bullpen, maybe they were worn out by the starters not going enough innings. I'm not sure, John.
And it's not just what we see, but it's what we don't see. Guys getting up and getting down and getting up and getting down and not being used. And because it's kind of an inconsistent thing with the rotation, so you never know, is it going to be a five and dive? Is it going to be out after four? You know, Vogelsong gets thrown out of the game. I mean, you just don't have time to prepare. And the relievers, it seems like Lopez is used every single night, and they keep calling guys up. You know, Broadway and you know, Osich, and Affeldt on the DL. And if your late guys are struggling, you know, that's felt all throughout. But it's mostly a result of, you know, the first half of the season, other than Bumgarner, you know, and to a certain extent, one or two other guys here and there. It was a rotation that gave you five innings. And eventually the bullpen, no matter how good it is, going to be worn out.
Well, two of the pitchers who might have been the main culprits of only going five innings, Tim Hudson and Tim Lincecum, they are both on the disabled list right now, and the rotation undergoing a major overhaul because Matt Cain and Jake Peavy are now in the rotation. They've made one start since coming back from rehab, and they're scheduled to go on Tuesday and Wednesday, respectively, against the Mets. What did you think of the first outing for each? Let's start with Matt Cain. Not as good as the Peavy outing, I don't think. I mean, for the most part, I thought they would be happy with it, but he did make a big mistake on the home run that he gave up and, you know, just wasn't able to win that game. You know, it wasn't what he would like as far as the location on some of his pitches.
It's been months and months and months and months since that guy has pitched in a big league game. Remember, he missed the end of last season.
Right.
He was ready to go at the end of spring and the setback, and now the DL again, more rehab starts. As Bochy said, he slow played Kane as he did Peavy. But still, it sometimes takes a little more than AAA starts, AA starts to get your timing down against these good hitters. Stuff that works in AAA is just not going to work. They're going to go fishing for this ball, where up here they're going to look at it for ball three, ball four. And, you know, Kane, his fastball command, his command on a lot of pitches just wasn't there. But, hey, you know, they need that guy. They need a number two. They need a number two guy behind Bumgarner. For a while it was Heston. Hey, it might be Vogelsong now. But in a perfect world, it would be Kane, because he was the guy who could give you 7-8 innings and, you know, produce a high 2, low 3 ERA and kind of be that guy to complement a number one. You know, in the past it was Lincecum, and then Kane himself emerged as a number one, and now it's Bumgarner. But they can't have Bumgarner and just a bunch of 3 and 4 starters. That's just not going to get it done.
No, and Jake Peavy looked like he could emerge as a guy who's really going to help the Giants in the second half of the year. He did make that mistake on the Clint Robinson home run, but what did you think of Peavy's performance and, you know, coming back from the back injury? Maybe this time he waited long enough. It seemed like he tried to come back too soon early in the season.
Yeah, no, this is an intriguing story. You remember he came from Boston last year. His record wasn't good. His ERA wasn't so good. And then he just kind of tore it up in the National League under Bochy, kind of a reuniting. And he wasn't great in certain games in the postseason, but the regular season track record was there as a National League pitcher again. And his first start coming back with the hip or with the back, and you know, that arm seemed, you know, all kinds of wear and tear on it. It was pretty good stuff. And to go as deep as he did, you know, in a close game, that's somewhat promising for this team, because, you know, it, like we say, it's okay to have seven starters, but you need five good ones. And the Giants brag about all this great depth in the rotation, but it's a little more important to have three or four good ones who can go seven innings.
Yeah, I mean, technically they have seven starters, but what is the future for Tim Hudson and Tim Lincecum? I mean, Lincecum had that ball that hit him on the arm and, you know, that comebacker, and, you know, that's going to heal. He didn't have any fracture or anything like that. So does he come back and become a regular member of the bullpen? And what about Tim Hudson? You know, he had some personal issues to tend to, and he was banged up. But when he comes back in the second half healthy, what do you do with him?
Well, it's a great point. And, you know, Lincecum got hurt conveniently. He probably was going to go on the DL anyway, but he took that pitch off his arm, and he was going to be shelved for a while anyway. So it was an easy DL assignment. Hudson, too, they were targeting that for a while, you know, 39, 40 years old. His shoulder was acting up. That didn't really come out in the press, you know, but I understand his shoulder has been an issue. He kind of kept it quiet. So the DL plus this all-star break, it's got to do him good. Same with Lincecum. Over his last six, seven starts, his ERA was 7+. And that's no way to keep your job in the rotation. That's no way to excel in a walk year as a free agent coming up here. So I don't know. I always seem to have all kinds of faith in Lincecum, because I've seen him rally back and, you know, throw a no hitter and go, you know, six, seven starts with a 2 ERA, as he did to begin this season, you know, before he scuffled, you know, starting in late May. But I just think that it's going to be a competition, and I think you got to throw contracts out the window, and guaranteed money out the window. And if Heston is your best guy, you ride the rookie. You know, if the old man Hudson is the best guy, you ride him. And I don't think they're going to go with a six-man rotation, but I think they're going to have a short leash. And if one guy has a couple of bad starts, I think maybe Lincecum is right back in there, or Hudson.
And Vogelsong's actually looked pretty good, but you always feel like he's auditioning every time he's starting it. You know, he can never really get comfortable in the rotation. And wouldn't that be unusual to have a 2-time Cy Young Award winner in the bullpen as a guy who's maybe, you know, like a long reliever, and a guy who's won over 200 games as a major league starter, maybe in the bullpen? I don't know if Tim Hudson's ever come out of the bullpen, right?
No, and Lincecum did, but that's when his velocity was a little better. That's when his control was a little better. And that was the heat of the moment, you know, entering the postseason, and through October, he was just dynamite. He can go 3 innings, 4 innings at any moment. You could, you know, shut it down in the ninth. He could do all that stuff because his fastball command was there, and his breaking stuff was low in the zone instead of high in the zone. Well, now it's the complete opposite. So it's like Zito. You never wanted to put him in the bullpen because he wasn't going to have the command. He wasn't going to have the velocity. He didn't have the strikeout stuff. And that's what you can say about Lincecum right now. So I don't know how valuable of a reliever he's going to be. I think in, you know, the best case scenario is he rallies back. Rigetti goes over some film with him. Maybe his dad gets involved. Mechanically, he gets more sound. He gets better life on his fastball and more command of the breaking stuff. And he's inserted back in the rotation maybe sometime in August, and they run with him that way. That's you know, maybe being overly hopeful for a guy who you know, has turned 30 and, you know, has a lot of mileage on his arm because he threw so many darn innings. for so many years, including the postseason.
What about Hudson, though? I mean, I don't know if he's a reliever.
No. Who knows? Maybe if you step back and look at it, I mean, he's all about routine and taking time off and amping it up, you know, during his off day throwing, and then day of giving it, you know, five, six, six and a half, six, seven innings, whatever it is. But it's something he's never done. But who knows? Maybe it's something he could do, because, you know, he can come in and get a double play. You know, he can come in and you know, he's got decent control. He doesn't have the high velocity, but with his movement, and if he is throwing just one inning instead of, you know, five or six, you know, maybe he amps it up a little more. Who knows? But I just think that it'll just come down to Bochy saying, well, who's going to help me the most?
We'll continue the conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle after this. Today's interview is being sponsored by Toscalito Tire and Automotive. You have to admit, collecting World Series titles is a new trend for the Giants, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at six Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide guarantee backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Giants games, going to Toscalito equals a stress-free life. No torture at Toscalito Tire and Automotive with four Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo. Toscalito, more than just a tire store. Let's talk about Buster Posey. He is the starting catcher for the National League, the All-Star Game. And we'll get to the All-Star Game in just a bit, but there really was a lot of talk about Posey being the catcher because he actually played over at first base. He sat out a game or two and then didn't catch there as much as usual. Andrew Susak's been behind the plate because Posey took one off the mask on that road trip, early in the road trip in Miami. And, you know, there's a discussion, should he stay at catcher? It's a dangerous position. And, you know, of course, the injury that happened back in 2011, you know, made you think about the best hitter on the Giants, should he be in that kind of precarious position? And I wonder about the fear factor. And before you comment on it, let's listen to what Jeff Berry, the agent for Buster Posey, had to say on this podcast at the end of last week when I asked him about the fear factor for Posey as a catcher.
You know what? When you're in the moment, I don't think it's something you think about. Buster, we all remember what happened in 2011. And, you know, he went back behind the plate without missing a beat. So I don't think it's something that you think of in the moment. Obviously, it's a consideration for anybody that takes on that position, but I don't think it's something that's an overriding thought when you're in the moment.
All right, so we're in the moment, so he's going to catch for the foreseeable future, I guess, but it's still something that, you know, people are talking about once you take a shot like that to the mask and you worry about a concussion.
And it's not just that. It's a need that he has to play first base more than not right now, because the outfield depth is pretty much zero. And
right,
with Pence out and Aoki out, well, Belt has to go from first base to left field, and Posey, you know, gets out of the squat and moves over to first base. But it's a fine line. How did they win those championships? They won those championships because Posey was catching, because he's so good working with pitchers. He's so good at calling a game and being the on-field captain. As a first baseman, his value isn't as great defensively. Yeah, his numbers are better, but let's look at some numbers. I mean, he has an 11-game hit streak coming out of the road trip, right?
Right.
Well, he played first base in seven of those games, and he caught four of those games. Well, you know, the Giants just got, as you said, bageled for six games. They were 0-6 on the road. And counting that 11-game stretch in which Posey has a hit streak, they're 4-7. And Andrew Susak was 1-16 on the trip as the catcher in place of Posey. So what's the benefit? I mean, are you improving your offense, but you're taking away Posey at his best position? And Susak is a good hitter. You know, he'll hit. He won't be 1-16. But, you know, when he's 1 for 16 and he's catching it, it's not the same as having Posey behind the plate directing traffic. I mean, the rotation was just not good on that six-game journey. You know, the ERA was six. So what do you do with Posey? It's a great conversation because he's better offensively when you put him at first base, but the team is not as good defensively unless he catches.
True. And, you know, the thing is, I mean, you have that option, so it's there that you could do it more often. It's not like where you have Peyton Manning and you're going to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to rest him and put him at wide receiver today, you know, because I'm worried about him getting hurt. He's going to play quarterback the whole game, the whole season, no matter what. With Posey, you have that option. I guess that's a luxury, but it does come into play where you keep thinking about all it takes is one shot and then you're going to lose this guy for a while. And, I mean, I'm glad to hear that his agent isn't worried about it, and maybe Posey isn't, but I know a lot of people out there are constantly thinking about it. Even John Kruk on the ESPN telecast was saying, you know, he definitely thinks Posey should be moved over to first base full time. People want to see this guy as a hitter for a long time, just thinking about the future.
Hmm. Well, you can't think about injuries. And
right.
When the agent says not an issue, well, the agent has the client sign, you know, for 10 years. You know, the rest of his career.
Right.
So financially, he's got no more contractual negotiations, maybe ever. So that's a done deal. Yeah, he's, you know, the stats show that he's a better hitter when he doesn't have to go through meetings with the pitcher and hang out with Rigetti before the game and, you know, catch a bullpen before a game and work behind the plate every inning, you know, and put on the gear. And mentally, it's a grind. Physically, it's a grind. Unlike first base, where you can get off the field and all you have to think about is hitting, whereas Posey gets off the field and he, you know, talks to his pitcher, talks to Rigetti, and maybe goes over some charts. It's a different ball game, and it's just amazing when, you know, a guy like that could win an MVP and hit 300 and, you know, hit 25 home runs and 80-plus RBIs. But, again, he's more valuable as a catcher, and they're a better team with him as a catcher when he's fresh. If you remember last year in the postseason, he had no legs under him. 17 games, he hit .246. He had zero extra base hits in the postseason last year. And that was a direct result of catching all year. So if they get to the postseason this year, maybe that's a benefit. Maybe he'll have more leg strength, and we'll be able to hit a little better. But his defense was invaluable in the postseason, as we know, all of his work with Bumgarner and company. So it's an amazing story and a great debate. But for now, I just think his value is better behind the plate.
And Bruce Bochy is a master at deciding how much he plays behind the plate, how much at first. Now, Bochy has his hands full as far as the All-Star game. You know, maybe not his hands full because he doesn't get to make that many decisions. But you wonder how many Giants will be on this roster. You have Posey as a starting catcher. You have to figure that Madison Bumgarner makes the National League All-Star roster. Brandon Crawford, very deserving for what he's done, being productive, hitting home runs, driving in runs. His batting average dipped a little, but you know he should be there, and so should Joe Panik, don't you think? I mean, he's one of the top hitters in the National League, hitting over 300. He's been really good defensively as well. I would think that there's got to be a way to get Panik on there.
Yeah, Panik, who's a better second baseman in the league overall? I mean, he just doesn't make errors. He's so solid. He dives for balls. He's a great number two hitter because he's a contact guy. You know, he can pull the ball into right field. He can go the other way. And it was nice to see when Aoki was healthy, and, you know, Panik too is a real nice 1-2 punch. Not so much anymore, no matter who they put up there, but I think he's got to make it. I think Bochy takes four. You know, he's going to be limited because he has to represent every team, and it's not like Bobby Cox and Joe Torre, who pretty much took every Brave and every Yankee. But now we're in the era where the players vote for the second team after, you know, the fans do their thing, and suddenly the manager has very few spots, you know, to complement his roster. So it might be hard, but I think Bochy's going to pull it off. Definitely Bumgarner, definitely Crawford. So that's three, and I don't see how he can't take Panik. So I think it'll be an upset if he doesn't take four Giants.
By the way, as we finish up here, I really like your idea, and I don't think I've seen this before, about having the players decide the entire roster. You wrote this in your column on Sunday. That's 2 weeks before the game, and then the fans get to pick the starters. I like that because then, you know, you've got the roster already, and it seems like it's a fair roster because some of the voting is skewed. I mean, for a while there, it looked like we had seven Kansas City Royals in the starting lineup for the the American League. That's crazy. Eight? Yeah, okay, yeah, eight.
The whole system now was developed when we had paper ballots, and it took a long time to collect them, count them, you know, and all that stuff. Well, this is the first year where it's totally digital. You vote online. So you don't need to start voting weeks ago, especially because you can't judge a player in May that he's having an all-star season. So cut out the early voting. You know, I don't care if it's a if it creates a buzz. I mean, who's really talking about the all-star game 2 months before it starts anyway? And I just think that it's kind of silly the way it is now. From what I understand, you could get on there, you could press a button and highlight all the Giants or highlight all the Royals and just press one button. You don't even have to go through the motion of voting for the second baseman and the short. You can vote for all local guys if you want, but, you know, with one little press of the button. I think that's just kind of silly. I just remember voting as a kid. Maybe you vote for a couple of your guys who are deserving, but you go around the horn, you want to see the best players. You just want to see, I mean, if you want to vote for all Giants, just go to a Giants game. Just go to a Royals
game. Right.
If you want to see the best in the league, you know, vote properly. And if you go on the internet, if you go to the ballparks, all the teams do is tell their fans to vote for their guys. And it's just kind of silly. It's okay for one or two positions, but not the whole team. And once you vote 35 times, and then you hear Donaldson, well, he has 14 million votes. Well, no, he doesn't. I mean, if some guys are voting 35 times, I mean, it's kind of silly to say, well, he's got 14 million votes. It's the most in history. I mean, it's just a bunch of people sitting on the internet and voting 35 times. I just think you got to totally revamp this and, yeah, have it so that when you know who the All-Stars are with 2 weeks to go before the game, let the players decide the entire roster, maybe players, coaches, and managers. And from there, fans have a week to vote for the starters. I mean, maybe you'll still see a bunch of Royals, but, you know, chances are you won't because you'll have less time to vote and you could maybe do a little better job of organizing it throughout the game and encouraging people to vote for, you know, the best players, maybe not just the, you know, Omar Infante, who's hitting 215, but he's a local guy.
Right. I really like it. I think Rob Manfred needs to have you on speed dial. But if he does, he's going to have a phone number at AT&T Park because, as we mentioned when we started, you pretty much live there. So, you know, he's going to have a direct line right to you if he needs to ask any questions about anything.
It is amazing how many tours they have here and how you have to kind of escape to a back room to speak with you. And by the way, the last tour guide came through here and announced to the 15 or so people on the tour, he said, the Giants do the best job of any team in baseball turning empty space into revenue. I said, really? And that's always true, but well put. You know, he's talking about all the little nooks and crannies where Larry Bear put seats and they knocked out part of the press box here to have a champion suite right behind the plate. You know, that's a pretty penny. So they tell the truth on those tours, that's for sure.
That's pretty good. And we tell the truth here on this podcast. John, thanks a lot for everything today. Look forward to seeing at the ballpark with this homestand with the Mets and the Phillies in town. Thanks.
Enjoyed it, Joe. Thanks.
That's San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea, who joins us regularly here on thesportsvirus.com. Join us again Tuesday night. We'll be at AT&T Park in San Francisco as the Giants take on the New York Mets. And then the Phillies are in town. We'll have our third podcast of the week on Friday. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.